जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी किशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंगना किशोरानंदना ब्रज जन रंगना यमुन तीरवन चारी यमुन तीरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंगना यशोरा नंदना ब्रज जन रंगना यमुन तीरवन चारी यमुन तीरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस वरिविराजकाचार्य श्लोकतरुचित श्री श्रीमद इष्टवाइंगेश भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय गवेश the assembled devotees. गवेश the assembled devotees. गवेश the assembled devotees. गवेश to Sri Sri Guru Gaurango. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 17, The Victory of Hiranyaksha, Text Number 20. Word meanings, Hiranyaksha, Anuja, younger brother, Tasya, his, Priyaha, beloved, Pritikrit, ready to please, Anu Aham, every day, Gada Pani, with a club in hand, Divam, to the higher planets, Yata, traveled, Yuyutsu, desirous to fight, Mrigayan, seeking, Ranam, combat. Hiranyaksho Nujastasya Priya Priti Kriranbaham Godapani Divam Yato Yuyutsur Mrigayan Arnam Hiranyaksho Nujastasya Priya Priti Kriranbaham Godapani Divam Yato Yuyutsur Mrigayan Arnam Hiranyaksho Nujastasya Hiyapiti Priti Kridambaham Gadapani Divam Yato Yutsu Megayan Arnam Hiranyaksho Nujastasya Priya Priti Kridambaham Godapani Bhuvam Yato Yutsu Megayam Arnam Hiranyaksho Nujastasya Gadapani Divam Yato Yutsur Megayam Anam. Translation. His younger brother, Hiranyaksha, that means Hiranyakashipu's younger brother, Hiranyaksha, was always ready to satisfy his elder brother by his activities. Hiranyaksha took a club on his shoulder and traveled all over the universe with a fighting spirit just to satisfy Hiranyakashipu. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The demoniac spirit is to train all family members to exploit the resources of this universe for personal sense gratification, whereas the godly spirit is to engage everyone in the service of the Lord. Hiranyakashipu was himself very powerful, and he made his younger brother Hiranyaksha powerful to assist him in fighting with everyone and lording it over material nature as long as possible. If possible, he wanted to rule the universe eternally. These are demonstrations of the spirit of the demoniac living entity. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Hiranyaksha Rudrakshyo Nujasthasya Priya Priti Krira Anvaham Kadapanya Divam Yato Yutsur Mrigayan Ranam. Gadapani. So we have this nice painting actually of the Hiranyaksha. Got the club on in his hand, ready to challenge anyone. Gada. I'll take this opportunity to say something about pronunciation. Most devotees say Gadadhar. Gadadhar. With the accent on the first syllable and the third. Actually, it's Gadadhara. It's only the second syllable that has the long A. Gadadhara. Dhara means holder. So in our Panchatattva mantra, it's not Gadadhar, it's Gadadhara. So Gada, here we have Gada. Gada means club. Pani means in the hand. So we're hearing about this Hiranyaksha, the younger brother of Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu, as Prabhupada says here, he wanted to make his brother powerful to assist him in taking over the universe. This is the demoniac spirit. We have different ways of categorizing things. One is this broad category of Daiva Asura. Daiva means the demigods or godly. Daiva. Deva means God. Daiva means godly. And Asura, of course, another name for the Daivas or Devatas is Suras. And then on the other side, we have the Asuras. The two kinds of personalities in this universe. Daiva Asura Evacha. Vishnu Bhakti Smito Daiva. Asura Stad Viparya. This is one of those broad categories. There are two kinds of living beings in the universe, the Daiva and the Asura. So the Daiva are the godly and the Asura are the non-godly. Asurya Namate Loka. There are those who are in the beginning of the Isha Upanishad, we have this phrase, Asurya Namate Loka. There are places for these demoniac persons also. In Prabhupada's commentary, his purport on that verse of Isha Upanishad, he categorizes it, especially the distinction between the Daivas and the Asuras, is that the Daivas, interested in, especially in human life, in human form of life, but even, well, anywhere in the universe, they're interested in self-realization. And, of course, they're interested in service to God. And the Asuras, they're not interested in that. They're just interested in eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy. They don't want to subordinate themselves to anyone. They just want to try to enjoy life. And they have these outlandish desires and goals, just like here it says Hiranyakashipu wanted to rule the universe eternally. So of course he's not going to live forever, well the soul is, but he, not in his conception of who he is, he's not going to be able to, but still he's thinking that way. So this is the demoniac spirit. Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, we have a whole chapter about these two, especially about the one. Well, the chapter is called Chapter 16 of Bhagavad Gita, the divine and demoniac natures. So divine qualities are laid out in the beginning, first three verses. They're all run together. Abhayam sattva samshuddhi jnana yoga vyavastiti, and so on. Prabhupada gives a nice purport, elaborating on all these different words. And then we hear about the demons for the rest of the chapter, basically. This is the verse about the demons here in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, text 4. Dambho darpo bhimanascha krodha parusham evacha agyanam cha bijatasya parta sampadam asurim. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demoniac nature, O son of Pritha. So Krishna gave 26 qualities of the devotees, divine nature, and here he's only giving 6. But they're very significant because from these grow other horrible things. Actually, in his commentary on this verse, Baladev Vidyabhushan says, there's a cha here. Dambo darpo bhimanas cha. Krodha parusham eva cha. Actually, there are 2 chas. So he says, besides these 6 that are mentioned, the cha means that all the opposites to the ones that were just mentioned about the godly persons. For example, one of the qualities of a godly person is hingsa. So cha means for the demons, it's ahimsa. I got it backwards. Ahimsa for the devotees and hingsa or violence for demoniac nature. So many of these things that are given in the list of the devotees' qualities, you just take the opposite and that's the demons. So they do everything wrong. So these words, Dumbo, Darpo, Bhimana, Shcha, I was looking at, because when I read this list, I thought, well, pride, arrogance, conceit. So I thought, well, they all sound like the same thing to me. Pride, arrogance, and conceit. So I was looking up in the dictionary, and pretty much they are synonyms. and in fact, the same phrase is used, I think, for all 3 of them in the dictionary I was looking at. There's one, they have, you know, sometimes in the dictionary you have a few different words. But they all have the same idea of having basically an inflated conception of yourself. You think you're better than you are, basically. That's sort of the thread that runs throughout these different words. Pride, arrogance, and conceit. Another word that's in the same category is vanity. Pride, arrogance, conceit, vanity. You think you're so great, basically. Sometimes we say that about people, right? He or she, he thinks he's so great. So this, of course, this was Hiranyakashipu, this was Hiranyaksha, he's demonstrating this. He wanted to take on anybody in the universe. He just wanted to fight, had this fighting spirit, and he thought he was invincible. So many demons are like this. So pride, it starts with pride. So what is our, where do we start? With humility, isn't it? In spiritual life. Actually, humility is not mentioned in this list here in the 16th chapter. But in the 13th chapter, we have another list of qualities, which are called, it says, this is knowledge. Iti jnanam. This list is knowledge. It's really about the cultivation of knowledge, how you become knowledgeable, or basically how you become a devotee, how you become godly, a Krishna-conscious person. So it begins there, amanitvam, the opposite of pride. Amanitvam means humility. Amanena, manadena, kirtaneya sadahari. You know this word mana? So mana means pride. Of course, in Krishna Leela, mana is a wonderful thing. Right? Srimati Radharani exhibits mana. It's one of her great attractive qualities. She becomes, sometimes it's translated as haughty. She becomes haughty. And she doesn't want to talk to Krishna. She keeps him away. Keep him away from me. He's hurt my feelings or whatever. So mana, pride, she exhibits this pride. So mana, this is the same word. Amanena, the ana part. Ana part means by or with pride. With amanena, manadena. The amana. We're supposed to chant the holy name without pride. We're supposed to be humble. Manadena, and giving man. The idea is respect, to give respect to others. Don't be proud yourself, but see others, see the good qualities in others and respect them. Gitaniya sadahadi. We have to develop that quality in order to chant Hare Krishna constantly. Because it takes humility. It's interesting how that's so important to us, this idea of humility, and how the first one mentioned about the demons is the opposite. They all mean pretty much the same thing, pride, arrogance, and conceit, these first 3, because they destroy that. You have to be humble to be a devotee. It's really the beginning of spiritual life. You have to accept some authority. If you don't accept authority, you can't make any advancement. That was actually the last time I gave class, Prabhupada discussed this point. how when you accept authority, then you can solve all your problems. Of course, our biggest problem is material existence itself. We've turned away from Krishna, and we need to rectify that. So humility is so important. There's a nice class, one of Prabhupada's classes. It took place, I think it was in Seattle. After the lecture, Prabhupada would take questions in the early days. So someone in the audience, in attendance, he expressed that he didn't like this idea of having to bow down. And, he would see if someone comes to the temple the first time. For us, I was thinking of this, we just bow down. We don't even think anything of it. Of course, we're supposed to be thinking. That's another thing. We're supposed to be thinking what we're doing when we bow down. But we just lay out flat, do dandavats. Dandavats, there are different ways to interpret the eight parts of the dandavats. There's eight elements in offering dandavats, or eight things that are bowed down, you might say. Ashtanga pranam, it's called eight part pranam, dandavat. So in one of his footnotes I've seen different explanations, but Bhanuswami, in one of his footnotes in the Gita, either Vishwanath or Baladeva's commentaries, says the eight parts when you offer dandavats are the 2 feet, the 2 hands, the chest, the head, mind, and the words. Those are the eight. So it's interesting that part of, is mind, you're supposed to be thinking. Savadhana mate, in the Sri Guru Charana prayer, Sri Guru Charana Padma. Bandhomoi savadhana means with care and attention when you offer your obeisances. I bow down with care and attention, not just doing it and not thinking. But part of it is also the word. You're supposed to say something. In fact, it's considered an offense not to say something. You're supposed to offer your words also in obeisances to the guru or the Lord, and your mind thinking about what you're doing. That's the hard part, isn't it? Thinking about what we're doing. We do it so many times, but how much do we think of it? So anyway, this person was objecting to this idea. I don't think I need to bow down to anyone. This is the demonic spirit, actually. That's pretty much the way things are today. This has been going on for a long time. There's no respect for authority to these days. So these days have been going on for a long time. No respect for authority. Beginning with one's parents, of course. Children have no respect for their own parents. They don't see them as any kind of authority. But humility means, no, you have to bow down to an authority who's more qualified than you. That's one reason people don't want to bow down, because they don't think anyone is more qualified. And this goes back to pride. Why should I, even children challenge their parents like that sometimes. Why should I do what you say? You're no better than I am just because you're older. That demoniac attitude is there. Actually, this reminds me, later in this chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it's right here, actually. Prabhupada says, in the purport to this verse that I read, text 4, chapter 16, he goes through the qualities of the demons, and he says, these demoniac qualities are taken on by them from the beginning of their bodies in the wombs of their mothers. And as they grow, they manifest all these inauspicious qualities. So right from the beginning, right in the womb, they're already demons in the womb before they came out. We think these, late, sweet, innocent child, but just waiting to come out, all these demoniac tendencies. Sometimes it shows up pretty early, too, actually. Horrible things even children do to each other, demoniac qualities. So this lack of respect is an indication of that. So devotees, of course, we're supposed to have good qualities. We honor spiritual authorities because of their good qualities. And of course, the greatest quality is that they're surrendered to Krishna. So this person doesn't want to bow down. He doesn't think he has to bow down because he didn't see that this person giving this lecture is any better than I am. So what was Prabhupada's response? Some of you may know about this, or may have heard this or read it. Prabhupada said, no, you have to bow down. What does that mean? It means that material nature is making you bow down. You're going to be doing dandabats in your casket on your back. You're going to have to bow down. That's material. We're bowing down at every moment, actually. We're completely controlled by material nature. There's no doubt about it. And of course, and behind material nature is Krishna. Krishna is controlling us. All the things, we can't survive in this world a moment. We're completely dependent entities. I mentioned this before, how precarious our situation is. At any moment, we can just die. And we think we're this body, so we think we're going to cease to exist. And of course, it does happen sometimes, just in a moment. People are merrily going on with their life, and then it's finished. I remember just years ago, of course this happens every day, but I heard a news story. A mother and her daughter were driving somewhere in the city, going some errands or something, and then they were struck, and then instantly they died instantly. They didn't have any thought that day that my life is going to end today, but it did. With no warning, it happens. So that's the precarious position that we're in. We're always bowing down because we're subordinate. And of course, these bodies, as I was saying, we're on life support. We have this idea today, someone is on life support. So, but we're all on life support, actually. Krishna can pull the plug at any moment. Sometimes families have to make a decision. Are we going to pull the plug, as we say, that the terminology that's used? Are we going to unplug them from life support? So we're all on life support. And we can be unplugged at any moment. That's our situation. And of course, why is that? Because this body is artificially seems to be alive. But it's actually not alive. This is a little bit of an aside, but it's something I was thinking of. I was thinking, sometimes the way we phrase things, we say we're not this body, but we're suffering because the body is suffering, and we think that we're suffering because we identify with the body. So recently, in the last, I don't know, few months, this kind of occurred to me. Maybe it's just one of those, well, duh, of course everyone knows that. But I was thinking, well, wait a minute, the body doesn't suffer. How does the body suffer? It's not alive. How can it suffer? It's dead. When I leave it, it's not suffering anymore. So I just came across last night, this was actually mentioned in a commentary by either Vishwanath or Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati on the Uddhava Gita, specifically the song of the Avanti Brahmana. There's one section. There's a whole, anyway, I'll explain his story. But he speaks philosophically. And he says more or less this same idea about how the body is just dead. So one of the commentators said, this body is a dead body. So the whole idea, it's not that we're identifying with a body that's suffering. The whole thing is just an imagination. The whole thing is just part of Krishna's illusion. It shows how deluded we are. That the body's not suffering, but I'm thinking I'm suffering because the body's suffering, but the body itself is not even suffering, actually. It's all in the mind. That's the context, actually, this Avanti Brahmana. He's talking about the whole problem is the mind, he says. Just, you know, control the mind. There's several, the whole slew of verses, actually, with this basic idea there. It's all about the mind. That's why, of course, yoga is about controlling the mind. And practice of Krishna consciousness is about controlling the mind. So anyway, I said, wow, I wasn't crazy when I was thinking the body's not actually suffering. The body doesn't suffer because it's just dead matter. It's just in our mind we're thinking. And it's a whole, of course, it's so expertly done. I was thinking, just like today, you know, because we have everything animated, computer, you can create so many different things that are not real. So Krishna's the best programmer. So he's created this program where we think that this dead body is experiencing something, and I'm suffering because of that. It's just the program that's going on, really, the ahankar. And actually, I think it's in that section. It says the main feature of the ahankar is the mind. So we think of them as three different things, but if you take them all together, it's the mind that's the real problem, the center of the problem. So, of course, getting back to the demons, they're controlled by their mind, their thoughts, whatever they want to do. This 16th chapter is a lot about how does the demon think? What is the characteristics? So these are the first ones. They have these characteristics, pride in their mind. Of course, these things are in the mind. Not only in the mind, but in their actions, in their speech. So this pride, arrogance, and conceit, anger, these are especially in the mind. Of course, they manifest externally. They're external symptoms of these things. Actually, when you're proud, you become angry very easily. Anger is such a dangerous thing. All of these qualities, of course, the natural thing to think, at least for me, is to think, well, I have all these demoniac qualities in me. We, as long as you're a conditioned soul, you're susceptible to these kinds of things. Until you're a pure devotee, you're susceptible to these demoniac qualities. There's this idea devotees say, I'm sure you've heard it, that it used to be that the asuras and the devas were in different planets, and then they were in different parts of the world, and now they're in the same body, something like that, right? You may have heard this idea before. The demons and the devotees live in the same body. So I was saying, is this Shastra? So I've been looking all over, and I couldn't find any Shastric statement that actually says that. But I think it's just common sense. That, yeah, we have our good side and our bad side. Sometimes it's portrayed, a person, they'll have an angel on one shoulder and a devil on the other shoulder. It's probably some Christian idea. So we have these two voices speaking to us, the demons. So the demons is still there within us. These demoniac tendencies are still there, proud. Why are we told to be humble? Because by nature we tend to be proud. So a proud, arrogant, conceited, and anger. So anger, of course, what is anger? Anger is from frustration of desire. Kama krodha bijayate. Krodha comes from kama. Kama means desires, material desires. So when your desires are frustrated, you become angry. We see this, of course, in children. They want something, and then they throw a temper tantrum. Their anger comes out. So we can also be like that. And there are also lesser degrees of it. Just dissatisfaction is a kind of watered-down anger, you might say. Ashanta, if you're not peaceful, if you're not satisfied. In Narada Muni's instructions to Prahlad Maharaj, he talks about the Brahmana who's not satisfied. One of the characteristics of a Brahmana is to be satisfied with whatever comes by the grace of the Lord. That's why atyahara priyashascha in the six qualities in Upadeshamrita that are destructive of devotional or destructive of the devotional path, our progress in spiritual life. So prayas means to endeavor with great determination for something that you want. And then what happens when you're frustrated? You get frustrated if you have those desires. Then you just become angry. So that's very dangerous. So it says the Brahman who's not satisfied, it means you're supposed to be satisfied. Not always, I need more, I need more, I need more. Acquisitiveness, that's a danger today because we can get so many things so easily. Just get on a computer, type in a few keystrokes, and then something's delivered to your door within hours. So it's a challenge not to be acquisitive. Everything I see, I just want to have it in my house. So we have to curb down that tendency. So this is an idea here that these things they can get out of control within us. We have to control them because these are demoniac tendency to always want more and more and more and not be satisfied. So it says a Brahmin who's not satisfied loses his tejas. And he loses, Prabhupada says we get spiritual power by practicing austerities. But that, what is austerity really? It's self-control. When we hear about Lord Brahma performing great austerities, what did he do? He really just controlled himself. He went into meditation. Meditation is considered to be a great austerity because you have to just sit and control yourself and not do something. So anyway, if you're not satisfied, you become angry. That's my point here. And then the other two that are mentioned here, these six that are mentioned in this text 4, harshness and ignorance. So there's different kinds of harshness, but we know, of course, harshness of speech. We'll hear about this later when Varaha is challenged by Hiranyaksha. So Hiranyaksha, one of the things he does is he speaks harshly. The first thing he says when he sees Varaha, he says, "Oh, an amphibious beast." And he says other things to discredit Lord Varaha. He says, we're people like us. We're just chasing after beasts like you, basically. Dogs like you. So he uses harsh speech. So this is a tendency, of course. What is, we read, of course, in the qualities of the different modes of material nature. So there's speech in the mode of goodness. So it's supposed to be pleasing speech. Of course, the most pleasing speech is speech about Krishna. In that sense, anything that's against Krishna consciousness, that's harsh speech. That's why one of the, talking about material things. That's why another thing we're supposed to give up, as mentioned in Upadeshamrita, is associating with non-devotees, because they're always speaking, and prajalpa, of course, bad speech that's not about Krishna, or hearing those things. I was just reading Bhaktya Loka. That's what it's called. Yeah, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on these verses from the beginning of the Upadeshamrita. So there he says devotees should not follow the news. They shouldn't listen to the news. This is Janasangha, association with non-devotees. Because what are they speaking about? All the things that are not about the absolute truth. We should be talking about Krishna, Krishna Katha. That's our life. So in that sense, not only do the demons talk harshly, but everything they say is detrimental in one sense. It's not going to help us, elevate us in spiritual life. We have to listen to pure speech, the pure speech of the devotees. Of course, this is we have to control our minds, as I was saying before. So one way to do that is to read and hear, to hear. When you hear, you tend to. And of course, we get distracted also. I admit, even though I read a lot, I also get distracted. And I hear a lot, I get distracted too. But at least there's more of a chance there. You can get absorbed. And people have understood this about reading for a long time, you know. You can enter into other worlds by reading. Reading opens up new worlds, new vistas. So we get to see the spiritual world by reading, by hearing. And that, of course, helps us to control our mind, help us fix our mind on Krishna, and of course develop in Krishna consciousness and so many good qualities by reading about. Recently, I've been reading a lot. I read the Bhaktiratnakara, which is about devotees. And then I've been reading another book it was put together by Dasharatha Shuddha Prabhu. It's about Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Baladev Vidyabhushana, and the author, Narahari Chakravarti, who wrote Bhaktiratnakara. So the lives of these devotees are just amazing. They're just amazing. One ecstasy after the other. And wonderful, this devotee, Narahari Chakravarti, I didn't really know anything about him, but it's in this book that Dasharatha Shuddha wrote, or put together, compiled. It's called The Story of Vishwanath Chakravarti. So this devotee, the way he glorifies devotees. I was thinking in Vyas Puja, you know, we try to glorify Srila Prabhupada. So I was reading how this devotee glorifies other devotees. It's just incredible. It's so beautiful the way he does. He just goes on and on and on in his glorification of so many, the six Goswamis and Narottam and Srinivas and Shyamananda and so many devotees. When Narottam and Shyamananda and Srinivas are traveling around in Bengal and Orissa, so they also meet associates of Lord Chaitanya. And in that context, then this Narahari Chakravarti, he starts glorifying the devotee that these other devotees are meeting. So it's so wonderful to hear those things. You think, wow, this is a nice thing to be thinking about. You read mundane stuff and you're thinking about how someone else is being glorified for their borrowed plumes, as the phrase goes. Krishna has given them some ability and, of course, their praise. But who's praiseworthy ultimately? It's the devotees of the Lord. So anyway, I was saying all this in the context of this quality of the demon's harshness. And then the last one is ignorance. Now, ignorance is really at the root of all of these other ones. Agyanam, here. Agyanam. So what are they ignorant of? Of course, they're ignorant of how to live. They don't know, well, they're ignorant of so many things. But especially, they don't know what's the right thing to do and what's the wrong thing to do. And why is that? Now, this especially is a characteristic of the demons, is they don't accept the authority of the Shastra. That's why they don't know what to do. How do you know what to do? Again, going back to this idea of authority, you have to hear from the Shastra. Now, we take this as axiomatic, that the Vedas are Krishna's directions. They're Krishna telling us what to do. They're God telling us what to do, how to live our lives, how to live a successful life, how to live a profitable life, the most profitable life, of course. You profit by gaining the association of the Lord. So they're ignorant of those things, or they ignore those things. You know, how Prabhupada would pronounce ignorance. So it's nice. Ignorance means you ignore. So you ignore, the advice is there. There are those who are foolish, they don't know better, they haven't heard, they're ignorant in that sense. Then there are those who ignore, even though they know better. They've been told, they understand. Just like you hear later, actually, Hiranyakashipu, when he's talking at the funeral of Hiranyaksha. So he speaks philosophy. You're not this body, and there's karma, and these kinds of things. So he knows something, obviously. He knows something about reality, but he ignores it. He doesn't care. Even Dhritarashtra is a good example of this. He also knows what he's supposed to be doing. But when he hears from Akrura and Vidura and others, especially Akrura, Krishna sent Akrura to Hastinapur to see how things were going, how Dhritarashtra was treating the Pandavas and so on. So he wasn't treating them well. So Akrura was addressing him, saying things to him, how he should act. And he said, well, I think he responded the same way to Vidura, that I understand what you're saying, but I can't act the way I'm supposed to. I just can't do it. I can't bring myself to do it. So this is the demoniac nature is there. So what we're doing, of course, we're trying to, we have these tendencies. We can go one way or the other, and we're trying to train ourselves so we go naturally in the right direction. It's like you can do that in so many ways. For example, you can take some stream of water and you can direct it into the garden or into the weeds. You can direct the water. So we're trying to form our tendencies so that we naturally act in the right way. Spontaneously, our reflex is to go toward Krishna, not the other way. Because in the beginning, as non-devotees, conditioned souls, our tendency is to go the other way. That's why we're here in the material world. We keep following our tendency in the wrong direction instead of training it to go in the other direction toward Krishna. So how does that, of course, it have over lifetimes of ignorance, ignoring going the right way, ignoring even when we know better, we all have this experience. Well, I know better, but maybe I won't do this or that. But we, and why is that? Because there's always that challenge there. We always have this little demon within us telling us not to act in the right way. So this is really at the heart of it, this ignorance. And that's why it said that initiation means getting transcendental knowledge. That's really what initiation is about. It's being the imparting of transcendental knowledge from the guru to the disciple. Jnananjana shalakaya, to get jnana. It doesn't mean we're jnanis, but we're getting transcendental knowledge of Krishna, sambandha, that kind of knowledge, sambandha jnana, that to destroy that ignorance. So once we know, of course, the jnana has to become vijnana. That step is sometimes quite difficult. Sometimes I find the jnana, it doesn't seem to be working. I need to get to that vijnana stage, realize knowledge, where it's spontaneous again, where it's natural, where spiritual life becomes natural to us. That really comes at the stage of nishta. Nishta, when your anarthas are gone. I was reading also about that. What are your different, what keeps you from nishta? There's a quote from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because we're thinking, well, I want love of God. I want prema. There's one place where he says, set your sights on nishta. You want to get to nishta first. Because when you get to nishta, then things really start moving ahead quickly. And spiritual life is much more relishable. So one of the characteristics of not being in nishta is that you get sleepy when hearing, chanting, or remembering. Drowsiness, that means you haven't made it to nishta yet. If you get bored, basically, hearing Krishna Gita or chanting your rounds or these kinds of things. So if you haven't gotten there yet, maybe you're still quite haven't made it to nishta yet. So imagine how far away prema is. It's a long ways away. So anyway, the other thing with nishta, then it becomes natural. It becomes more natural. Then you become really, really enthusiastic and you start progressing very quickly to ruchi. You get a taste, then nothing can stop you then, right? That real taste. Actually, you don't, I was just reading this in Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or maybe it was another, I was reading different commentaries on the Upadeshamrita, and it came at the point, came up there, that you don't really get ruchi until you get nishta. Then you get to the stage of ruchi. What you get before, maybe it's a little something. You can get some happiness just in spiritual life, but that can also be just that, well, your life is better now. It can be the mode of goodness, we can say. Now you're living a life more in the mode of goodness, so you get some happiness for that. Or there's also a kind of happiness in the expectation, the conviction, the faith, that, wow, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, so I'm happy because, you know, I'm going to go back to Godhead or I'm going to get Krishna prema. So there's that. But the real taste, transcendental taste above the material plane, that's a different thing. That's a whole other thing. That did explain, of course, in the Bhagavatam in the beginning. It says, when you get that taste, you never forget it. You don't forget that. It was such an experience, deep, intense experience, that when one has that, then there's really no turning back from that. So anyway, I was just talking about ignorance. This is all in the context of ignorance, how we get transcendental knowledge, and then we progress, and then as time goes on, we lose our affinity for these lower modes, being touched by these lower modes of material nature, rajas, tamas, which lead to kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya, all these bad things, these are more of the demoniac. So the whole chapter, I mean, this is just, you know, I'm just talking this one verse, but you know all these, the talk of the demons, so much wealth do I have today, and I will get more according to my schemes, and he's my enemy, and I've killed him, and I'll kill my other enemies too, so... I was thinking, actually, when you read this, you think, well, boy, anyone who's not a devotee is a demon, but I know people, they're not like this. So I was thinking, sometimes when you want to make a lesson, you make a high contrast. You show black and white. so you can really get the idea. So the way the demons are portrayed here in many of these verses are like really big demons. Not everyone is thinking, I'm going to kill everyone so I can get my way and so on. So then you see, well, this is the extent of it. This is like a real asura. But if you're not a devotee, then you're going to share it to some degree, all of these bad things. So you have to work on getting rid of them. Okay. Any questions or comments?
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you for your class. Prabhu, this concept that the body is not alive, but it grows and, you know, and produce and get sick and die. I can understand that the mind may think that we're suffering, but the body do have these symptoms, so.
Yeah, well, that's part of the illusion. I mean, things can grow, and what does it mean, really? Something is going on. There's some movement, there's some interactions going on there. But at the chemical level, when you bring it all back down, well, life doesn't come from these chemicals. So how can it be alive? It's all just atoms. When you get right down to it, there's no life there. So it's just like, you know, you can take some material thing and make it move and go through different kinds of changes in certain ways. You can build something and, you know, it looks like it might look like it's alive. Now, of course, we have robots. More and more, we're going to have robotics, robotic assistants. So they will look alive. And of course, people get fooled, too. Just like the whole, you know, artificial intelligence now. It really seems like, if you interact with it at all, it really seems like you're interacting with a person. I mean, I find myself, like sometimes I'll do some research, and I'll use some AI tool, like ChatGPT. So it's like I have to keep telling myself, there's not a person here. I don't need to get embarrassed by the question I'm asking. Because it's just a machine. It's just a computer that's very good at searching the whole, you know, digital world. So it seems alive, but it's not alive. So similarly, this body is moving and so many things are happening, but when you go all the way down, it's not. It's just we think of it as life, and we may call it life, and we may even say, well, the spark of the soul within the body gives the body life. And we say, what's the difference between a live body and a dead body? But the thing is, I mean, Prabhupada would also make this point. It's always dead. It's only because the soul is there that it seems like it's alive. But so, you know, so you get into semantics here. You get into the language. But when you get right down to it, you know, philosophically, it's just matter. It's just dead matter. So it's not alive. Of course, it's also full, we know, the body is full of entities like bacteria, and there's a soul in all of those, so it's full of life in that sense, too. But overall, you know, when you go even deeper, of course, it's only the, you know, the soul. The soul is life. The body's not life. It can never be life. It just seems that way. Krishna is a magician. One of the translations of Maya is magic. So this is Krishna's magic show. You know, people see a good magician and they think, this person just did the impossible. This has to be some kind of mystic thing, huh? But no, it's all tricks. It's all manipulation of matter. So Krishna can manipulate in such a way that we're all fooled. Yes.
Prabhu, what was the source of the point that if one is not at nista stage, if he is falling asleep, you know, during hearing and chanting?
That's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on Rupa Goswami's Upadesha. Actually, I forget because I was reading commentaries by different persons. What was the first one? Anyway,
okay.
There are different commentaries by acharyas, bona fide acharyas, And one of them was making this point. I forget who it was. It may have been Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I can't remember. But I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Yes, Vishwanath. Now I'm getting the two books mixed up. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Aishwarya Kadambani. So he lays out these different steps to prema. So when he talks about this transition, going from anartha navritti to nishta, so he talks about, he gives a list, different qualities, mm-hmm. and anarthas that you have to get rid of. So it's in that context where he talks about that. Mm-hmm. He lists these, and one of those is this idea of sleep drowsiness, where you get mm-hmm. sleepy. So that's something you have to get rid of to go from anartha navritti.
And you also said that once one has taste, ruchi, there's no turning back. But didn't Bharat Maharaj, didn't he get further and then?
Yeah, well, there's always the aparad. If you make an aparad, you can fall from anywhere.
What was his
aparad? So apparently, I don't know what his aparad was, but it's interesting because it says there, I think in the Bhagavatam, I'm pretty sure, that it says the only way this would have happened was because of karma. But then the commentators say, well, it wasn't really karma. It was aparad, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Now, maybe he says there, I don't remember actually, if he says specifically what his offense was. Yeah, Prabhupada also says, but I don't know specifically what his aparad was. So that lesson is there, of course. Aparad is so dangerous. Yeah, you can fall down from a very high position.
I was thinking about the good dog, bad dog. 72 translation of Prabhupada, last verse of third chapter, Evam Buddhe Param Buddha, Sangstabha Atmanatmanam, Jahi Shatru Mahabaho Kamarupa Duvashadam. Prabhupada translated, knowing self as a transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, one should control the lower self with the higher self. So Prabhupada did say there is a two self.
He stated
72.
Oh, about the two, yeah.
Yeah. So Prabhupada did say, I think that's
right. But I was talking specifically, devotees say it as if it's a verse, that there's a sura and sura in the same body. So what you're saying is essentially the same thing. We have a higher self and a lower self.
Yeah,
but there's no particular shloka that I know of that says...
Well, in that verse, I take it, Prabhupada said that one should control the lower self with the higher self. So
yeah.
There is a two self.
You said the last verse of the third chapter?
Yeah, Evam Buddhe Param Buddha.
What's the translation?
42.
You're working...
No, it's in the
43,
translation.
43. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, and thus, by spiritual strength, conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. Or you're talking about the actual... Now, one thing is...
This is the Prabhupada's old translation.
Uh-huh.
It says lower self and higher self. I heard his audio voice.
Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental. This is the same as this, right? Oh, you're right. Control the lower self by the higher self. Now, one thing is, the lower self can also refer to the body and mind, because those are also called atma, right? So control the body and mind by the soul or the intelligence. So anyway, we all know there's a little war going on in there.
Yeah, two more. So when you were speaking also about these other qualities, so anger, I have seen that anger has actually moved things, because usually anger is like stored up, frustration, mm-hmm. whatever. However, I've seen Krishna allow or create this emotion in people to create a big change, right? So I don't know that, I'm sure, that it's not one of the higher qualities But I do feel like it does have its place.
Well, the only shastric support or guru shastra, sadhu shastra I can think of, Narottam Das Thakur, says anger should be used against the enemies of the Lord. That's how he says you dovetail anger. So I can think, I mean, a devotee gets angry, maybe it's helpful in the sense of, well, I shouldn't get angry. I know what this means. It means I have some material attachment.
No, but like, I'll give you one example. One devotee once was giving class years ago, and he was tending to the lodge, and there was a guest there, and he had met them. They'd been there for a couple of days. And then one night, like around midnight or so, he called and said something about he wanted milk for his child. And so the Prabhu was trying to get him to understand, you know, well, you know, I got to get up like in, you know, 3.5 hours, you know, can we just, you know, can I get my rest and some other way to pacify the child, whatever the conversation was. But the gentleman became very irate and just kept increasing this intensity of what he wanted, he wanted. And so the Prabhu, because it's a service to serve the guest, he, you know, succumbed to it, and when they went to the kitchen and opened the door, there was a fire going on where the ghee had been left, you know, just on the pilot light or whatever, and it had caught on fire. And he really got that. If this gentleman, who he knew his nature was not like that, wouldn't have got, you know, irate, he would have went back to sleep and things would have looked quite different the next morning, right? So I'm just saying, like, I'm not saying, like, you know, ego anger or whatever, but, you know, we just never know how. And, you know, I know for myself, I had a situation and I didn't realize how angry I was. I just, the body just held it, right? Mm-hmm. And then through some facilitator, I was able to get in touch with it, not even knowing I was storing, you know, that kind of energy. And afterwards, I tell you, the release was like, and I kid you not, when I walked out, I saw Super Soul in every blade of grass. I mean, it only lasted for seconds. But there are things that we block, and we hold on to certain emotions, but if we can release them, it didn't hurt anybody. You know, I had a facilitator, I was there, but I got in touch with that, you know, and somehow was able to let it go. And it created space for what you're talking about, all these other, you know, qualities that a devotee, you know, has to exhibit. So...
Okay, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.